Okay, so it's day two at Learning Technologies, and I'm with Gert Leonhard, who's a futurist, and he's just delivered an amazing opening keynote. Gert, a part of what you were talking about was the fact that there's plenty of untapped information and data in the world, which would be really powerful and useful for learning. And there are some questions around the fact that, well, you know, how do you make sense? You know, there's already a lot of information out there, and as a kind of learning professionals, how do we begin to make sense of, you know, even more data that's just round the corner?
Yeah, I mean, we have this global trend towards what people call big data, which means a lot of data that's coming out now that was never available. For example, APIs allow us to find data from cities about populations and traffic and police incidents and so on. All that data is coming out now through APIs, you know, platform interfaces. And what that basically means is we need tools to structure and to create illustrations of that data so that we can make it manageable. For example, it doesn't mean much by itself to figure out what the traffic is in the city. But if you do a Google Map overlay with where people are going, what jobs they may be having, what kind of demographic is there, and so on, it creates interesting stats about realizing how things can be different. Yeah. And so that needs an interface, and I think there's a lot of companies working on this, how to make this more manageable. But we have seen nothing yet. We're only at the potential of, I would say, not more than 5% of that 100% of data that's underneath all of this. So, you know, these days it would be impossible for you to hire a chief data scientist because everybody needs one.
Yeah.
But data is only the beginning. So the interface and then William Gibson calls pattern recognition, you know, is recognizing what is in that data as a pattern so that you can read some intelligence from it. Mm-hmm. And this is like Watson, you know, IBM's machine playing Jeopardy. It's possible for computers to do it, but it's a human function, is to recognize those patterns.
Okay, so in terms of, I've got a couple of questions around how you filter information, because you're obviously looking at lots of stuff all the time to be able to deliver some of the keynotes that you deliver. So how do you currently do that, and how will you be doing that in 5 years' time, do you think?
I think what it comes down to, of course, for myself, is that if I have sort of epiphany or a realization, then I try to orchestrate and create a theme around this. For example, I realized years ago somebody else said data is the new oil, and that those kind of things tend to stick if you have a relationship to reality. Mm-hmm. So that learning becomes, you know, you put stuff around it, and so you create a theme. And that's kind of what I do with my work and my books. I create themes around this, and I go a little bit deeper inside of those themes. But otherwise, I think for human management of this input information, you have to rely on your sort of the seeding process. And things fall by the wayside that aren't supposed to stick and other ones do. But if you concern yourself too much with that sort of, you know, feeding more information, then it becomes an overload thing. And the other thing is, I think it's very important to go detox when you can, because the brain is not a machine, right? You can't keep going.
Yeah.
So, you know, go away for a week, go hiking, don't look at any emails, go offline. That's kind of part of the process of chewing on stuff. And as I was saying in my speech, the conversation. So when you're talking to people about this information, it becomes relevant because you can ping pong back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't happen when you read a book by yourself. But when you publish the highlights on Kindle and people can comment on it, then you can have a conversation.
And do you think there's you're talking about IP, and a lot of organisations are concerned that their employees they just go and find information, and it might be right and it might be relevant or it might not be. And yet you're saying we've got 9/10 of the global information yet to discover. So there's going to be even more information. We're currently, obviously, user-generated content. We're already creating, a massive fire hose. So where do you see that playing out in terms of, you know, the individual finding out the stuff that, you know, is the right stuff in and amongst, you know, it's like the signal amongst the noise type thing.
Well, but in the end, this is much more of an art than a science. You know, if an artist uses a certain paint, you can't ask him, why didn't he use blue or something? You know, so he didn't, you know. Mm. This kind of thing is a process of curation that goes inside of the creative mind, so to speak. It has a lot to do with what you can find, what you can't find. But, you know, a lot of companies are much more concerned about what they can own and claim for themselves than what they could actually know. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of pathetic, of course, when you think about what it creates, sort of this fake security of having a lockup on something, which is completely fake, no matter how you look at it. It's just a perception. You know, even doctors and banks who are very closed about their businesses, especially banks are secretive about it, are realizing that, you know, the future is about becoming networked and create value for everyone rather than just for me. Mm-hmm. It's extremely difficult to create the value and keep it inside now because everything is completely interdependent.
Yep.
So the business model of creating your own sort of sandcastle, you know, what's referred to as castle building, in 99% of the time won't work because you have to be a very good builder. You have to be Steve Jobs to build your castle.
Final question then. If that's the situation and the reality for the future, then what does that say about the skills that we need just individually around that sort of filtering and the tools and skills? Are they is it a digital literacy?
I think it's a question of the lifestyle adjustment, but also of the freedom to stand the fact that it's going to be confusing, it's going to be at times chaotic. We may not have an answer immediately. We have to admit that we have to chew on this, and we have to go offline to do that, and we have to be able to play with this information, and we have to be more like a musician, you know, rather than a bank teller. So I think in the end, it brings us back to being more human, because in the end, there is no one answer. You know, you can feed information into a computer, and then you can ask them, is this plane going to fly or is it going to crash? You know, you can do that. But when you're talking about economic issues or issues of inequality or energy, you know, there are so many soft factors that you need to create this reality. It doesn't exist. So I think what it means is being able to live with ambiguity. You know, it could go both ways.
Yep.
Being able to live with what Marshall McLuhan calls the chaos of the global village, and putting some shape into that, that's inevitable. I mean, and as we're going together to be 7 billion connected people, is it going to be noisy? Yes. Is it going to be chaotic? Yes. But is it going to be better in the sense of finding solutions? Definitely. But they're not going to come from a central entity.
Mm-hmm. Gert Leonhard, thanks very much.
You're welcome.